It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 404. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show, and also you can send me a friend request on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. That's the best way to find out when the new content's being posted up, when I'm going live. Like tonight, I'm recording a half hour early. I have lots to get to. I have a great voicemail from Kate, and then a great email. So a nice portion of the show is definitely been provided by Kate. I have great emails from all of you that are educational for everybody. Norbert has a great email that I'm going to get to, and then some tremendous questions that I want to cover. So this content for tonight's show, it's all about you. So thank you, and keep the emails, the questions, and the topics and the responses coming. I really appreciate it. Being able to attach a face to a name is important. It enhances our relationships and the way we do business. But unfortunately, meeting all your colleagues and clients in person, it can be impossible. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It lets you meet face-to-face from anywhere in the world, even on the go from an iPad. Here's how it works. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, it takes a webcam and a click to collaborate in group HD video. You can see your attendees eye-to-eye while collaborating on documents in real time. Plus, GoToMeeting, it's so easy to use. iPad users just download the free GoToMeeting app to join. Mike Tech Show listeners, you can try it out free for 30 days, but you have to go to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code podcast. So go to GoToMeeting.com, click on Try It Free, and enter the promo code podcast, and you can get started testing out and kicking the tires, and you are going to love it. We're going to start things out with a voicemail from Kate on how to remove the Smart HDD infection. Kate brought this up last week in the chat room, and I asked her if she could take a moment and record message that I could put into the show. Here it is.
Hello, Mike. It's Kate Eales, Kate Stir, up here in Kelowna, British Columbia. Hey, I just wanted to touch base with you on the removal guide for this really vicious infection called Smart HDD. There's a terrific removal guide for it at bleepingcomputer.com, and I will send you the link. Just real quick, it's one of these infections that scares the bejesus out of users by popping up a window looks like a scan, says your hard drive's about to fail, and then it tries to pick your pocket for a cure. And of course, what it's doing is stealing your money, but it's stealing your credit card information, and who knows what happens to it after you pay up. So bad, scary stuff. Was around a couple of years ago and is coming back strong. And that guide on Bleeping Computer has recently been updated to deal with the latest variants. So just real quick, this past weekend, I had an opportunity to follow the instructions on that guide. And in the end, I successfully removed the smart HDD. It was interesting. It involved booting into safe mode, running rkill, running TDSS killer, running Malwarebytes all in safe mode, then rebooting and running unhide exe. And the reason you have to do that is because what the infection does is turn the desktop just a solid color, apparently blue. Hides all the shortcuts, all the desktop icons, makes the start menu go away, and you have to let unhide do its work, and then manually, put the guy's picture back on the desktop and customize the start menu and all that kind of stuff. Now, I mean, this took about 3.5 hours, and during that 3.5 hours, I did also fix a couple of other computers for this guy's father-in-law. So it wasn't a complete waste of time for everybody. But I will say this, the instructions in Bleeping Computer are pretty clear that you don't want to be deleting any temp files while you're clearing this out. And that's why, even though I know you're a giant fan of CombiFix, you shouldn't use CombiFix. At least that's what they say. Take a look at the link I send you, and then love to hear your comments on it. Just in closing here, the first thing I did when I got there was ask if there was a recent backup, and the guy said no, there wasn't a recent backup, but he did have a new hard drive that had been sitting on his bookshelf for 3 years since his father-in-law gave it to him, but he didn't know how to set it up or anything. Now, I try not to judge people while I'm there, because I'm pretty good at this stuff, but I mean, don't ask me to change my own oil, right? I said, well, let's get this cleared out, and if we can get it cleared out, then we'll set up a backup. It doesn't make sense to set up a backup for you now because we know you have an infected system, and we don't want to back up something that we don't even know what it is. So I go through the whole cleaning procedure. I'm done with all of that. I then run the Super Anti-Spyware standalone just to double check. We pull out some more crap, and I set up his backup for him. And then while the backup is running, I think, well, this drive's been sitting around on the shelf for 3 years that he's been admitting to. I have no idea really the state of it. So I run Crystal Disk Info. Now, of course, I would have run Crystal Disk Info at the beginning, but the most important thing, it seemed to me, was to clear out the infection. So while I have the external hard drive in plugged in, I run Crystal Disk Info. Good news, no problem with the external hard drive. Bad news, his C drive is throwing sector reallocation errors and yellow lights all over the place. So, ironically, I've gone out there to deal with an infection that falsely reports problems on his hard drive, only to find that he actually has problems on his hard drive. So, as Rosanna Dana says, it's always something. Take good care, Mike. Thanks for all you do. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Kate. And she provided me the link that I'll put in the show notes. And she accompanied that with some more comments. And then I have another great email from Kate. So she's been busy. First, her two other comments. On your XP users' antivirus choices, I find that Microsoft Security Essentials is too much of a resource hog on older, slower, RAM-deprived systems. You were far more patient with Avira than I was. I abandoned it long ago because of the pop-ups and because it was too complicated for many of my customers, especially the ones clinging to 12-year-old computers with 512 meg of RAM. Oh, I'm seeing them too often. So, when confronted with such a system, I installed a free version of Avast, and it's better at handling a complete lack of resources than MSE, and it's way less confusing than Avira. So I'm embracing Avast on computers that are, let's say, power challenged. They don't have the RAM and processor that we want. So thank you for that recommendation. And then finally, she says, you mentioned deleting the old install files that start with the dollar sign. And I just wanted to let you know that the other temp file cleaner, the one I've been using, will do that. The program is here, and that I will have in the show notes. So you know I've been recommending Temporary File Cleaner by Oldtimer, and Kate has this other one, so let's give that a shot. And she's been, I know, using that for a long time and has been talking about it, so I'm going to give that a try. I see that we're now up to version 4, and I haven't tried that yet, but I do know that version 3.1.1 works just fine on XP Vista and Windows 7 32 and 64-bit. You can get the earlier version off that same site, or you can wait for me to test it in a day or two. The portable version is available, and all versions require Java. This utility is not for the faint of heart, but it has saved me a lot of time over the past 2 years. If you run it before you run Malwarebytes or Super Anti Spyware, you don't have to scan those darn temp files all night. Don't run it if you're working on the smart HDD problem, though. That's all I have. Thanks, Mike. Keep up the good work. Well, she does have more. And this is recovering Word documents. In response to last week's email about someone wanting to go to the recycle bin and they've already emptied it and they want to recover a document. In show number 403, someone wrote about losing a Word 2010 document, and the discussion involved to protect it trash bins. I think sometimes, because we are all such geeks, we tend to introduce a level of complexity that isn't strictly necessary. It's relatively easy to recover Word documents, especially if you realize you need to recover them soon after you delete them. You don't need anything special in the way of trash bins. You just need to use what's native to Word 2010. Open a new Word document. Click on File, Info, Manage Versions. On the drop-down arrow, click on Recover Unsaved Documents. That will usually work if you have Save Auto Recover information and keep the last autosave versions, if you close without saving, enabled in the settings for Word 2010. So the lesson here is, if you don't, make sure you have them checked. Microsoft explains more here to recover earlier versions of a file in Office 2010. And of course, that will be in the show notes. You might also be able to recover a document from earlier versions of Word. Check these articles on how to recover a lost Word document. What is the auto recover feature in Word? Another support document. If you are using Windows 7, even if you're already emptied the recycle bin, you can use Restore Previous Versions to recover most files, including Word documents. I wrote about this in my column last December. Here is the link. I wish I hadn't deleted that file. Of course, that will only work in Windows 7, but there is always shadow copy. Windows 7 versions above Home Premium give the user access to shadow copies. But in fact, there are shadow copies in all versions of Word 7, except maybe the starter version, and in Vista, the forgotten operating system. There are two free tools that give you access to shadow copies, including the ability to restore files. Shadow Explorer, and I've linked this and talked about it, so this is a great link, will do that. And I think I first heard about it on your podcast. Lots of people report success with it. Another tool is VSS Copy. And we have a link to that. I just tried this out this week, and I like the interface a lot better than Shadow Explorer. And there is a portable version. Woohoo! The website is kind of a train wreck, but if you just stick with it, you can get either an installer or a portable version. I think English is a second language for the author, but the software works just great. And before anyone rushes out to buy Zero Assumption Recovery for $60 US dollars, I would totally give Recova from Puriform, which is the author of CCleaner, and I would give them a chance. When I set up a new computer, I just install it for the customer. Sometimes I don't even mention it. I wish Puriform would let Nine Night put their products back in the installer. That's a great idea. Then, when they call me in a total panic, I can remote in and use Recova to get their cat pictures back. Anyway, what I was trying to get across here before I got into discussing third-party tools is that we don't always require third-party tools to get things done. Yikes, I've totally geeked out. I hope this helps at all. I certainly hope that everyone who uses Word has opened up their settings and turned on autosave by now. Thanks for all your good work, Mike. Take good care. Kate, thank you so much for your contributions, your feedback, your insight into your life in the trenches doing computer support and repair. And I really appreciate all your great work that you've done and contributing to the show. And I know everybody listening appreciates that. Next email, and this is important. This is from Norbert, and his website was hacked last weekend. And this is lessons learned. Mike, I want to thank you, Katester, and Lee Bullis, who is Bull422 in the chat, for letting me know that Chrome was flagging my site as having malware on it. I went to the security site that each recommended and did my due diligence to find out what happened and take the steps to correct it. While I was going to try to clean it up myself rather than pay the $80 per year or so for monitoring and cleanup, no bad, by the way, if you actually make money off your site, not so much in my case, I quickly found out that nearly every single PHP file on my site, and there are 19,000 plus files on the site, were infected. It would have taken me days to clean it up all by myself. Thank goodness the SQL file was being backed up regularly and had not been corrupted, as that would have been disastrous. I decided after a while to bite the bullet and wipe the site clean. I deleted the entire WordPress installation, including plugins and my custom theme. Bad thing, I did not have a good backup of those files. What an idiot I am. I know better. Well, I did a clean install of WordPress on Sunday, installed all my plugins and some additional security ones and my custom theme. And I don't even know what he's going to say here. Norbert, I hope you installed the plugins for backing up your website and your database. And you can set them to back up every night automatically and email you the backup. It zips it up and backs it up. Then, early on Monday morning, I got the custom theme back up and running as it once was with my branded site header graphics. What a nightmare of a weekend. It was just like cleaning an infected PC. It would have been better if I had just had a good backup, and I would have been able to wipe and reinstall the site in a matter of an hour or so. I think I will be putting my clean install on Dropbox so I can reinstall from anywhere at any time, no matter what. I guess that is what the cloud will be good for, having backups of stuff you need at the drop of a box. I like that. This way, I can be on vacation and still be able to fix my site if necessary. Oh, and yes, I did harden the site with additional plugins for security, as well as making changes to the permissions for secure FTP access only. And of course, I changed all the passwords too. Thanks again to you and the great people of the Mike Nation. Norbert, thank you. And again, more valuable lessons here. It's not just backing up your PC. It's not just backing up your, you know, whatever system. Don't forget about your website. Anything that's important to you, if it's your iPhone, your iPad, your Android phone, back it up. Find the tools, and there's always a free tool to back up. Find it. If you have a Mac, you have Time Machine. Back up, back up, back up. It's so important, and hopefully everybody out there who hears this will know to, you know what, before it strikes, before this happens to you, be prepared. This is from Grady, and it's in response to my comment on the Intel Matrix Storage Manager. And he says, Mike, regarding your last podcast and the Intel Matrix Storage Manager package breaking Windows updates, there is no reason to have it at all installed. I don't really deal with desktops and laptops anymore, just server storage networking. But in working on friends' computers, it is just another piece of bloatware. Never worked with an Intel RAID card, so not sure on that front. I work on all Dell HP servers, so PERC and smart array cards. Thanks for all your great podcasts on both shows. Grady, thank you very much. I kind of wondered about that Intel Matrix driver. What good does it do? And I always see it on every Dell system that I'm setting up brand new. And if it's the factory install, you know, they have that driver and monitoring software running. What's it doing for us? I eliminated that from a couple systems I've been working on. This is from Bruce, and he says, I have a question about my Windows 7 home premium computer. I want to allow the unsigned ActiveX control that is pushed by my off-site IP camera. I can do this by temporarily chancing my security settings in IE8. The problem is, if I close the browser for any reason, I have to go back to the security settings in IE8. I know that I can make the change permanent using Group Policy Editor. The problem is that it is not available in my home premium OS. Is there a way to do this that does not require upgrading my OS? I am not sure. I could use some help on this one. If you have a moment, let me know, and I will share it with Bruce on how we can have those settings apply. Now, I don't understand if you're making a security change in the advanced settings of IE8 and you save it. I don't understand when you bring it back up, it's not set that way. Or maybe I'm misunderstanding the question. So if anybody has some insight that we can help Bruce, let me know. This is from Jerry, and this a little more complex of an answer here. How are you, Mike? I've been a longtime listener of the show. I have been a computer technician for 15 years and was recently laid off by my employer because of budget problems. I was just given a great opportunity at a business that has Time Warner as their service and are switching over to Verizon Fios. The IP addresses are different, so they will have to be reconfigured over the new Fios settings because the server and systems are set up with static IPs. I know very little about Windows Server 2003, but want to get the job as it will turn into a long-term contract. What is the first thing that I should know or do as the company wants this done as soon as possible? Thanks in advance. This is Jerry. The first thing you need to do is identify what the IP scheme is. Then identify what equipment Time Warner provided that they will be removing. This might be easier than you think. If they have their own firewall that's managed by them, or their own router, then they could very easily be internally providing all the IP addresses that are a private scheme. It might be 192.168. So just because Time Warner, they're changing to Fios, that's their external IP. Unless they're using Time Warner's router, which I hope they're not, and providing the IP scheme, you mentioned they have servers. If they have a server, if they're running DHCP, they absolutely are taking care of their private protected IP scheme on their network. So here's what you have to worry about. So first, you got to identify how our IP addresses are being delivered internally in the company. Identify all devices that are static IP addresses. That means printers, servers, any devices. Are there any systems that have specialty functions, certain computer systems that may have static IP addresses? This scheme may not be changing. And if that's the case, it's going to be really easy. All you have to do is identify what are the public facing IP addresses. Are they hosting email? If they are, this is a big deal, and you got to plan the migration because their public IP address is changing, and therefore mail delivery will now be going to a different IP address. You're going to have to change the MX records. That requires some careful planning and timing so you can have the new internet connection set up and test it. And then on a Friday afternoon, make that change. It gets a little more complicated there because do they own where their domain is registered? Are they able to have the login credentials so you can make changes to the MX records? Now, do they have VPN and remote access capability into the company? Those external DNS entries or external IP addresses are going to be changing. So that's something else you have to plan for. Are they hosting any web servers in a DMZ area? Now, those IP addresses could be changing. It is a lot of work. And if you've never handled anything like this, and I've actually emailed Jerry and offered my consulting services to help with this, I normally don't plug like that, and I normally don't respond like that to a listener, but clearly Jerry might be in, not over his head, but certainly could use some professional guidance and assistance here. I have done this, and I have done this many times where I've had to manage an IP scheme change for an organization, both internally and externally. And there's lots of things that need to be thought of and procedures, and you got to have everything timed right and organized. And if you think you're in over your head, or you just say, look, this is a big project, and to scope it out, you're going to need a little assistance and bring in some cavalry to help, and I'd be glad to help. If not me, please go to someone that does have experience with this and IP changes. And then once you go through this once yourself, you're going to be a pro at being able to document and make these changes for another organization while you pursue your consulting career. One thing I always do, this is where I would pull out Microsoft Project and I start documenting everything and then organize the steps to find out what you have to do first. Make sure you identify the dependencies that if you change this, then you got to change, you know, if you change A, you got to change B, then C, then D. Make sure everything's lined up and organized. And then you have all the steps and you have a project plan that you can follow up with and a project plan that you can give to your client that shows, look, you've thought about all of the detail, all the consequences, all of the possible ramifications that are part of this. This is a big change. Anytime you're going to be changing your IP scheme. And I hope I've given you some things to think about. I don't know if I've solved the issues of all the things that you're going to run into, but I'm here to help. And let me know. Thanks for asking that. And also, Jerry, please follow up. If you were able to take care of this and handle this and what happened, you know, please follow up and I'll share this with everybody. This is from Ernst. And I had a laugh and smile at this question when he said, good morning. I love your show and watch every single episode. If he watches every episode, then how come he's asking this? Keep up the good work. I just wanted to pass along this site if you're not already familiar with it. I use the resources and suggestions that they recommend all the time. Thanks. And it's technibble.com. Ernst, I don't know where you were. I talk about Technibble all the time. Maybe it's just been a while since I've mentioned it, but Bryce is a great guy who not only has Technibble, he has produced a great consulting business kit for your business that I have recommended and linked and many of you have purchased. The ultimate tip and consulting site is technibble.com. Bryce is a great guy. If you haven't heard of it, that is a bookmark that you absolutely have to have if you haven't went there. Thanks for reminding me anyway, because it's been a while since I mentioned that. And I know Bryce is a listener of the Mike Tech Show and of Tech Vets. Thanks for bringing that up. This is from Clark, and he says, let people know that after they install this, and this is the free Microsoft SkyDrive desktop app with free cloud storage. After they install this, they should go to Manage SkyDrive and take the opportunity to claim their 25 gig of free space. This is offered if you are a loyal SkyDrive user. Microsoft says this is a limited time offer and they do not list a date. So thank you for that. He also forwarded me a Google Drive versus competition comparison that I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm not sure of where this is from Mashable and what from Christina Warren. And what I'm going to do is find the article, and rather than read you that article, I'll just link the article in the show notes and you'll be able to take a look at this, which is really good to understand about Google Drive. And it's storage versus pricing, the upload limit, collaboration and sharing, mobile integration, desktop integration, and then some final thoughts. Clark, thank you very much for sharing that with me. I want to take a moment and thank Tim Connolly, who's in the chat. He's reached out to me when he was coming to Philadelphia, and he's still here, actually, for some training. And he reached out to let me know that he was going to be in the area. And we got together last night, and he had his first really good cheesesteak. So took him to South Philly, took him to Gino's, and we had a good time. We were only able to spend a couple hours together, but it was great. And I so enjoy meeting you when I get the chance. Like, I met Norbert a few years ago in California, and I do miss... I'm just not out there anymore on business. I get to see Ron, Homer once a month, and me, Claudius, Mark at PAX. It's great. And, of course, everybody that I've met at the Pittsburgh meetup. It's very cool and a lot of fun, and I really enjoy it. And if you are a regular listener, and if I have the time, you know, let me know when you're in the area, and I will do my best so we can meet up. That's it for tonight's show. I do want to remind everybody, as always, to please continue supporting the show by using my Amazon link. It really helps. When you go to amazon.mikenation.net, or if you go to miketechshow.com/Amazon, your price stays the same, but a commission comes back to help support the Mike Tech Show, and I really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much. That is it. No music for tonight, but we had a jam-packed show of lots of great links. There's a long list of tremendous links that were mentioned here, and I will carefully put them all together for this, which is show 404. Thank you so much for listening, supporting the show, for downloading and staying subscribed. That's it. I'll see you next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.